won't be surprised if it damages the reputation of the Boston Red Sox. If it hasn't already, let me add to that right now. You can call into the show at 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. It's now 11 o'clock on this Thursday, January 16th, the year 2020. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford. Station identification time as we approach hour number 3 of the Shukri Wright Show. We're here with you until 12. I'll be back here again tomorrow from 3 p.m. to 5. So for 2 hours, I'll be back tomorrow afternoon from 3 p.m. to 5 right here on 91.5 FM WMFO. So with that being said, I want to continue on what Gasper wrote in the in this column as well. He also wrote, Gasper that is, quote, "The Sox parting gift to Cora on Wednesday at Fenway Park was a serious reputation polishing on the way out of the door. Principal owner John Henry, you know what else he owns, team chairman Tom Werner, president and CEO Sam Kennedy, all took great pains to paint Cora as a managerial martyr, a selfish leader who fell on his sword and sacrificed himself for the good of the Red Sox. Please. We all liked the charismatic Cora, but he brought dishonor to the Red Sox. He did damage to the 2018 World Series team reputation and possibly the organization's future, pending MLB's discipline. He has left the Sox in the unenviable position of conducting a managerial search less than 2 months before pitchers and catchers report to Fort Myers." Side note, less than a month. He's not a hero. Quote. I'm gonna break this first layer down right here, right now. And I agree with Gasper. I really do. He's not a hero. He's not a hero in this situation. And the harsh truth is this. He did in fact bring dishonor to the Red Sox. And that's the part that really should anger Red Sox Nation. It really should. For once, I'm asking to step back and really think about the situation wholly. This is not a classic case of, oh, this is New England against the world. No, it's not. No, it's not. So get that out of your head immediately. This is not New England against the world. This is the Red Sox versus trying to save face and possibly save their behinds. Because I'm pretty sure, and I think the media has basically said it over 1,000 times up until this point, the Red Sox better brace themselves. Because this is not going to be pretty. In terms of the punishment and what's coming next, we're just waiting. It's only a matter of time. Not a matter of if, but it's a matter of time before we all find out what the penalties are for the organization. And the harsh thing about it all is this. When you look back on what Cora did, Cora always struck me as a guy who was confident. The confidence, there was never a question about that. Overconfidence? Yeah. Arrogance? Oh, you better damn believe. You better believe. And in this case, his arrogance and overconfidence is what did him in. He believed that he would be able to run and use and implement the same system, the very same system down in Houston, in which he implemented for the players to use, thought that he was going to be able to bring it here to Boston. And consequently enough, he thought he did. And it led to him winning a world title. So let me understand this. And let me make this very bluntly clear. Alex Cora single-handedly affected the outcome of two World Series. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And on top of it all off, he did it shamelessly, without any shame and without any regard to the organization that he was working for and the organization that he ended up working with, both Houston and Boston. So frankly, if you're going to blame anybody for this, blame that man. Don't blame Major League Baseball. Don't. Because you'd be foolish if you honestly thought and believed, for whatever reason, that the Red Sox and the Astros were going to come out unscathed, especially Alex Cora. Don't be surprised, ladies and gentlemen. Do not be surprised if he were to even receive a lifetime ban. Don't be surprised. Because of these two reasons. Number one, the Red Sox organization was born in September 2017 before Cora took over. That same season, Cora instituted the system used down in Houston to the electronically steal signs. That's one. Two, Cora apparently brought the same thing here. And then all of a sudden now, we're expected to believe that he's some sort of a martyr or a hero. Get out of here with that. Like, you could really, really miss me with that nonsense. It's utter BS. It really is. And good for Gasper for calling this out in his column, because frankly, anybody who's still foolish enough to think that, but is everybody out against? No. This is not everybody out against. No. You got caught cheating. I'm talking about you and you only right now, because this is Boston. This is Greater Boston. This is New England. I'm not talking about any other team because I don't give a damn. Right now, I don't. As it pertains to your team, you got caught after you were warned. So miss me with the arrogant attitude of, well, everybody else is doing it, nonsense, and own up to it as a fan base. Own up to it. Because at the end of the day, the harsh truth is, no matter what happens next, no one's coming to save your behinds as an organization. And the fan base, sadly enough, is going to have to suffer because of it. Does it suck? You better believe. But again, blame nobody but the Red Sox. The Red Sox can't blame anybody else but themselves. And that's the truth. Zach Medeiros was supposed to call at 11 o'clock. He's going to call at 11:30 to talk about the NFL playoffs. So it'll be a bit more shorter of a conversation then. But it's all good. It's all good. And when we return, we're going to talk about an article that was written in the Globe today. Actually, was it today? I believe it was yesterday. But either way, there was an article that was written that I think it deserves to be talked about, and it's going to be part of our discussion going into the 2020 Red Sox. What happens now? Because there was a point in which that if you're looking ahead to the 2020 season, there are some concerns. There are actually quite a few. But either way, we'll be back after this this music break. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. This is Shukri Writes and the Shukri Writes Show. And you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show here at 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, Tusk Free Farm Radio. Zach Medeiros will join us in about 11 minutes. So for right now, still taking your phone calls at 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. I gotta tell you, it's been some sort of day so far. And one thing I will say in terms of the Red Sox moving forward, I do wonder if the Red Sox have some sort of contingency plan if a heavy penalty is in fact levied against them, because they have to be thinking along those lines. Well, save judgment until the conclusion of the investigation. You sure? Positive? You still need. You still need, for example, a backup plan or a plan in place, because if you don't, you are going to be caught pantsed. And what do I mean getting caught pantsed? Meaning someone is going to come from behind and just pants you. Just pull your pants down. That's what it means. If the Red Sox don't have a backup plan as to what's going to happen next, I got news for you. That's just bad preparation all the way across. So, I do wonder. I really do wonder. What could have been? What could have been? And it's crazy because there was an article that was written 2 days ago by Adrian Walker, also of the Boston Globe. And yes, I read the Boston Globe a lot. I do. Yes. So a lot of the articles that I'm referring to and I talk about on the show do in fact come from the Boston Globe and so forth. And one thing that was written that kind of really like stood out to me. This is part one. This is part one of two. Quote, Alex Cora could have owned this town. In fact, for a while he did. Who can forget the excitement and the trust inspired by the rookie manager whose every instinct seemed to pay off during the 2018 postseason? The Trailblazer named one of the Bostonians of the Year, quote-unquote, by the Globe magazine as the first person of color to lead the racially cursed Red Sox. Oh? Racially cursed? I get it now. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, may I remind you that the Boston Red Sox were actually the last team to integrate? You may remember a player by the name of, was it Pugsy Green? Yeah. He just passed away, I believe it was 2018? Yeah, 2018. He just passed away passed away actually recently. First black player for Red Sox. Interestingly enough. Yeah, Pumpsy Green, rather. Excuse me. Yeah. He passed away last year, 2019. Summer 2019. So, on top of that, For a long time, the Red Sox did not have a player of color, let alone a manager of color. So with that being said, it's just so crazy how Alex Cora's fall from grace. It wasn't even gradual. It was just a sharp deep dive, like a dive bomber, like a warplane that flies downward, like on a straight path. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where if you look back, let's say 10 years, minimum 10 years. And you look back in this scandal and you say to yourself, wow, what's the legacy going to be for Alex Cora and all this in Boston? I think that in itself, I mean, 10 years down the line, I think, despite the fact that he did win a World Series here, but that World Series will forever be tainted. No question, it will forever be tainted, whether you want to hear it or not. It's the God honest truth. So with that being said, I gotta tell you, if you are, for example, if you're one that's really into facts and not be blindsided by your own personal agenda or even your own blinding allegiance to a team and so forth, blah, blah, blah. This one hurts. This one really does hurt. And the part that hurts the most about it is that man clearly earned your trust. There's no denying it. There's no denying it. He earned your trust. However, the sad part about it is that I feel that if you were a guy who, or a woman, or any fan, period, for the fact of the matter, if you are a person who actually understand the ramifications of all of this, it's not a sad day for Alex Cora, because he gets no pity from me. But what I will say this is that it is a sad day for a sad day and a troubling time for New England, especially for Red Sox Nation, because of just how damning this information is, and that has been leaked since Monday. You don't want to know what's truly crazy about this, and what's amazing about this whole thing is, let me tell you. A week ago today, I was all over the whole Tom Brady discussion. The Patriots, what are they going to do? Oh my God, the contract situation, and so forth and so forth and so forth. A week later, the Alex Cora and the cheating scandal that's rocked Major League Baseball, that's become an even bigger story than the Tom Brady contract situation. And you know what's crazy is that I know ultimately that this story will in fact die down. It's going to die down. That I know. But what isn't going to die down is the Tom Brady talks. Because listen, those of you that are here in Boston, Greater Boston and New England, you all understand. You all know and understand that the Patriots, it's a 24/7 thing. They are. It's nonstop 24/7. What are the Patriots doing? But especially since it involves the greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady, it only amplifies it even more. So what I'm saying is, if you're New England, if you're Red Sox fan and members of Red Sox Nation, this is a really bumpy way to start 2020, a rocky way, and a tumultuous way to start 2020. And by the way, you want to know what's funny? Red Sox Winter Carnival is this weekend. Yeah. Yeah, it's this weekend down in Connecticut. And I just thought of this now. Like, there were, you know what? You know how awkward it would have been if, for example, they didn't fire Cora when they did. They didn't fire him on Monday night, or Tuesday night, rather, excuse me. And he came to Red Sox on Winter Carnival in Connecticut and would have had to face all of that, all of the fans, and especially, of course, Nesson, the TV home of the Boston Red Sox and the Boston Bruins, being there to cover it all. Do you really honestly think this would have boded well for the organization? Even just from a PR perspective, I don't think this would have went well. So timing is everything. It just so happens that if you are a Red Sox fan, and even this weekend, you're basically going into the weekend without a manager. And I know for a fact that is going to be a hot topic amongst in the entire fan base. I'm pretty sure it will. Coming up next, we're expecting Zach Medeiros of the Toronto Argonaut of the Canadian Football League to join us momentarily. And I'm sure that he will. It's just waiting patiently here. But in the meanwhile, we're gonna take a break and wait for him to call. This is Shukri Wright, and you are listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford Tufts Reform Radio.
Oh, what a joy. Just come on down.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show here at 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford. We have on the line with us, ready to join us now on the Shukri Wright Show, 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford. It is Zach Medeiros of the Toronto Argonauts of the Canadian Football League. Good morning, Zach. How's it going, bud?
Hey, man. Doing well. Good morning. Just getting ready to go over these playoff games with you, man. Very exciting past weekend we had, and going to be exciting looking ahead to the conference championship games.
Oh, absolutely, without question. And I got to start off with this one game. You remember last week...
You remember tied game first, aren't you, man?
No, actually, I should, but I decided to take a different route. I did, and you know what's crazy is that Saturday night I actually was tempted to message you, and I was like, you know, maybe I should. But I was like, no, this isn't a I told you so. But I really, really sincerely did have that hunch that the Titans were going to pull off that upset. We've seen crazier things happen like in the playoffs. And this is just a classic example of why you have to be very wary of a 6-team going against a team who has been playing as well as the Titans have been playing, especially in Baltimore, a Baltimore team that really hasn't faced much adversity this season. So I want to get your thoughts on what happened with Baltimore and why did Lamar Jackson, essentially, he went from looking and playing like an MVP to looking like a show of his MVP self during this game.
Yeah, well, you know what? Like, what a game, first of all. But, I mean, I really underestimated the Tennessee Titans this year.
So did a lot of people.
I'm a big position. I know they're going back and forth for that last playoff spot in the AFC wild card, and they're able to sneak in there. And in my mind, I thought, you know what, even if Pittsburgh or Tennessee get that last spot, it's not really going to matter because they're going to be out in the first round anyway.
Man.
Mike Vrabel, what a coach. I mean,
seriously,
I think he's going to be a very capable, great head coach, but every game plan he's had going every week. I mean, even the first game, look at what he did. Great game plan, got out of there, no one expected it, going in a hostile environment in Foxborough, New England, where you're from, and pulled off that off. And I don't care that the Patriots didn't have the weapons on offense, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. They still had one of the top defenses in the league.
Exactly. Yeah.
By the numbers, mm-hmm. Right? They went in there, took care of business, did their thing, got the dub. Following week, they go into Baltimore, and that's when I was like, you know what? No way. And I just thought with the way Baltimore was built this year from top to bottom, special teams, Lamar Jackson, I thought it was just going to be way too much for them to handle. And they, man, I don't even know where to begin. Let's start the defense.
Yeah.
With that. You know, going up against the Baltimore Ravens, people have to understand, yes, you're going to give up chunk plays. If you're going to play a perfect game against the Baltimore Ravens and you have any hope of winning that game, you're going to give up chunk plays. And for people who don't understand that, what I mean by that is you're going to have plays where Lamar Jackson rips off a 30-yard run or completes a pass over, you know, 30, 40-plus yards. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to have big chunk plays down the field.
Mm-hmm.
The key and the thing that the Tennessee Titans did well is that they didn't allow them to get into rhythm ever. So even when there was times where Tennessee stopped them on first and second down and maybe Baltimore, the odd drive, went on third down, got a big third down play, got to midfield, it never really fazed the Titans' defense, I felt. They kind of got back to the script, got back to the game plan, saying, oh, we got this, and they got the Ravens off the field in key parts in the game. And then Derrick Henry, again, he did the exact same thing that he did against the Ravens, 30 carries. I thought they would have had a change up somehow. I thought Tannehill would have had to be more involved throwing the ball, but that wasn't really the case.
No.
He did his thing. He ran the ball well. He got almost 200 yards. Tannehill.
Yeah.
You know what? Give him credit, too. I mean, yes, he didn't he didn't throw the ball that much, but when he did, he made an impact. How about that one when they got the turnover in the very next play? He fired that ball downfield, for 7 points there. It was a great throw.
Yeah, it was a bomb. Oh, yeah.
It was a bomb. It was a bomb. And right after, when they got to 14-0, I'm like, I was thinking of you right away, man. I was like, man, it's early in the game right now. But Tennessee is, you know what? I was still confident the Ravens could come back in this game, but they just never really convinced me enough that they got in the rhythm on offense. And it started to show,
yeah.
I'd say, in the third quarter. In the first half, Lamar seemed cool. He's like, you know what? At some point, we're going to have that breakthrough, kind of similar to what the Chiefs had against Houston, maybe.
For sure.
But it just, they never really got that breakthrough. Tennessee, I mean, they rushed for the entire game and played a great zone defense and were blanketing everybody and didn't give Lamar really anything to work with.
And you know what's interesting? Like at 14-0, I had the biggest smile on my face, and I was like, this is exactly what I envisioned. Because what people, I feel like people in America really didn't understand, and even in Canada, for those who watched the game, what they didn't understand is Tennessee, what they have done well throughout this run so far is they get a lead, they get ahead, and they don't relent. They don't give up. And
they take care of the football.
Exactly. They don't turn over the football on offense. It may not seem like a big deal, but when you're playing January football, that's the difference between winning and losing. It just is. And I had to remind someone the other day, and I said, listen, the Titans are reminding me of a team to a certain extent that is doing something very similar that nobody really saw coming. And this team has started reminding me of the 2011 New York Giants. Because remember, the Giants team that year was 9-7, but they won the division. They beat Atlanta at home, but remember, they had to go on the road to Green Bay. And remember, the Packers were 15-1 that year with Aaron Rodgers. And we all know how that went. And they end up pulling off the upset. And they a very similar style offense, running pound with Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs. But with the Titans in this case, you have the big bulldozer and Derrick Henry that we talked about on this show. That man led the NFL in rushing yards for a reason. And he showed a case exactly why he's single-handedly the biggest factor as to why the Titans are shockingly one win away from playing in Super Bowl 54.
Yeah. And it's crazy, too, because when you look at Derrick Henry and the Titans, that's the thing that scares me about them a little bit, right, is that other than him, who else do they have in the backfield to kind of compliment him? It's a Derrick Henry show, and, right?
Yeah, Deion Lewis.
Luxury.
Yeah.
Deion Lewis, yes, okay. Deion Lewis, too, but I mean, they don't have that luxury in San Fran where you can, you know, run three guys.
Absolutely. Right? Mm-hmm.
It's Derrick Henry, it's his show, but it's not slowing him down. It doesn't seem to affect him. He doesn't seem too fatigued by it. Like, he just keeps trucking on. And pay that man. Once the offseason hits, they have to have that guy stick, because you're not finding another running back like that ever.
And it's true, because, like, when speaking of San Fran, I don't think neither one of us are overly shocked that San Fran beat the Vikings on Saturday night in the manner in which they did. The defense was really the big story of the game, getting pressure on Kirk Cousins. Now, my question to you is, for this Niners team, for them to win in the manner in which they won on Saturday, what was the single biggest key for the Niners in terms of managing the game clock while as well as on winning the battle on the line of scrimmage?
Oh, well, you just hit it right there. I mean, did you see the O-line compared to the Vikings O-line?
Oh, man, night and day, night and day.
Mm-hmm. Night and day, I'm telling you. And you know what? I don't want Vikings, great run, great season. Cousins, you know what? He should have made some better decisions to down the road. But, I mean, he didn't have an awful, you know, he still passed pretty well.
Yeah,
he threw some yards, but the O-line overall just didn't do enough for them. And I think just top to bottom, San Fran overall just had a, they were too overwhelming for the Vikings, I felt.
I agree.
And when you're comparing the O-line, again, it's night and day. San Fran's way ahead of the curve. They deserve to be an NFC championship right now. It was too much for them to handle. Sherman's back to playing like his all-pro self.
And he's healthy.
And he's healthy, exactly. And the thing is with Jimmy Garoppolo, too, and it's kind of, we actually talked about this last week, you know, the biggest thing for him after he left the Patriots was, you know, first of all, keeping him healthy, right?
Yes.
He had to make it through an entire season and see if he's worthy of that big contract that he signed.
Yeah.
And he showed that throughout the course of the year. You look at the big games that he played in.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans took care of business. Green Bay, they handled them easily, right?
Yep.
Against the Vikings. We include that game. It was a big game, right? Divisional round. The Vikings had a very good team this year. Took care of business. That one, you know, yeah, maybe it wasn't his best game, but overall, he still took care of the football, right?
Mm-hmm.
Game was well managed. They had a great run attack. And the moment wasn't too big for him. And that's what I think will probably give him the edge over Green Bay going into NFC Championship. I don't think that they're 37-8 better, like, you know, the meeting they had back in November, I believe, but I think the game will be a bit tighter. But I just think, again, but back to Vikings and them, I just think it was too much. They had too much depth, too many weapons on offense, and their defense is way better than Minnesota's. It's not even close.
We're talking with Zach Medeiros of the Toronto Argonaut of the Canadian Football League live on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford. Now, looking at going back to the AFC side, I'm shaking my head from what I'm about to say. I really thought the Houston Texans had him where they like him. But man, oh man. There's two major layers that we're gonna talk about. Number one, and pardon me, ladies and gentlemen, for saying what I'm about to say. What the hell was Bill O'Brien thinking with that fake punt attempt leading 24-7, the play calling, number one. Number two, oh my God, I don't think you and I have ever seen an offensive explosion like the Kansas City Chiefs had on Sunday. Your thoughts?
Well, let's start off with the Houston Texans. I mean, what a start to the game. I mean, clearly Kansas City did not settle in.
No.
Until after that block punt. I mean, they actually had 7 points in the board at that point, but still, they weren't officially settled in until that point.
Yeah.
But they had them reeling. And 24-0, they didn't really have to do all that much to win. All they had to do was just maintain the game, maintain the momentum of the game going forward,
mm-hmm.
and they would have been fine, right? And after, yeah, I was in as a specialist, and I'd be remiss not to bring up that horrible call. Usually when that happens, guys, that goes through, listen, it definitely went through Bill O'Brien. He had to get the clearance from the special teams coach to run that play.
Exactly.
Or he told the special teams coach to run that, which, why exactly? It's like you said, you're up 17 points at that time of the game. Why run that? You have all the momentum still on your side.
I agree.
Just punt the ball out. Living our down, Kansas City hasn't shown me enough on offense yet during that game that they're just going to drive down the field and score. They weren't doing anything yet. Your defense was playing great, and when you do that, it goes to show you that you don't trust in your defense.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Exactly. So then, and then that happens, and I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be tough. And I thought, you know what? Okay, the very least here, or at very best, hold the three, live to fight another down. But even with that, even with the touchdown, They were still up. It's like, guys, let's keep cool here. Let's keep moving forward. You know, so things were still, you know, in their favor.
For sure.
And it almost seemed like too that the Houston Texans were kind of shocked to be like had that lead. You know what I mean? I think I know that they believe they're capable, but I think that they were, you know, shocked at the 24-0 lead. I assume anyone would have felt that way. Going up against Kansas City, but it's almost that they weren't comfortable being up that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just throughout the course of the game, and then you look at Kansas City, they came roaring back. I never seen two blowouts in one game. That's never in my lifetime happened like that. Anyway, going up 24-0,
wow.
And then Kansas City comes back and outscores them 51-7. And on top of that, they set an NFL record for 7 consecutive touchdown drives. And I mean, if you can't stop that, 7 straight drives going for touchdowns, you do not deserve to move on to the next round. At some point, you need to give your team a chance because they had multiple chances on offense to get back in the game. They had a 24-point lead. You can't allow your defense to give up 7 consecutive touchdowns.
Yeah.
You're never going to win a game. You don't deserve to move on.
And what, you know, what's crazy about that game that I remember was that they were up 24-0, and then that first touchdown drive, Kansas City, they were marching down the field. It was like, all right. But then in the back of my head, it was like, shoot, that could be the one. And it turned out to be the one drive that Kansas City needed, because had Houston held them to a field goal, I really don't think it would have been that damaging. But that play call was just god awful, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And after the game, I kept saying to myself, you know, I'll give Kansas City a great deal of credit, because they have been that type of offensive team this season, no questions asked about that. However, man, Bill O'Brien, you suck in terms of just the clock management, and then your ability to make the adjustment in game is what really just baffled me. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, your defense is just gas. It was to the point where they never recovered.
No, they didn't. That's the thing. And you know what? I don't know how you felt with this, but going into halftime, you can just see by the body language on the field, I'm like, this game's over.
Yeah.
At that point, they were already defeated. They gave up the lead at that point. I think it was, 28-24?
Yes, it was. It was 28-24. Mm-hmm.
20-24, but you can just see the body language, and the Texans were just—they're finished. And I'm like, guys, like, this is still a ball game. You're only down by 4. Like, I understand you have 24-0, and it sucks, but you know, you have to find a way to rally back. This is do or die. You don't have another week. This is it. And they just couldn't. Going into the second half, they were just not the same team. And it's right, the coaches, the adjustments that they've tried to make, just nothing was working. And I've been harping a lot on the Texans defense, and
yeah.
You know, rightfully so, but at the same time, their offense couldn't really get anything going either. Their offense didn't really seem into it. Kansas City just—it looked like they're enjoying the game a lot more than the Texans were after a certain period of time. It's unfortunate, because I was so excited watching this game, because out of any upset going in this week, I thought Houston realistically had a very good chance going into Kansas City and taking them. Right, and moving on to the AFC Championship game. I thought they really had a good chance to win there and beat them. But just after that, I'm like, what the heck happened? Like, you can't do that. You can't give up. This go 51-7. You know, and I think at one point they gave 41 straight points. I'm like, guys, come on. At some point, you need to put some sort of drive together, something, at least 3 points.
Yeah.
And they just weren't able to do that.
And what do you think changed before? Because we got to get to on the Seattle Green Bay game, but lastly on this game, what do you think changed in terms of the Texans' offense? Because in that first quarter, they were firing on all cylinders, and I mean, but then something just seemed to just turn that switch off.
I think I couldn't even tell you. Everything that they're trying to run early in the game, I feel like they're still running throughout the course of the game towards the end. There, it was just Kansas City started to settle in. They may have made, made a QQ adjustments throughout the game, but I just think the confidence level just went down. It's almost like they didn't believe that they were going to, you know, be back in this game, right? And it showed, you know, even some throws. Deshaun Watson usually makes him asleep. He's underthrowing the receivers, overthrowing receivers,
yeah.
Right? You're running the ball. I mean, he really couldn't get anything going. He didn't seem confident in himself at times, which is very, you know, rare to say about him, because he might be one of the more confident QBs in the league. And, you know, again, it just goes to show. One team just went in halftime. And, I mean, the Texans really only showed up for one quarter of the game, and that was it. And then after that, it was all Kansas City. So from my perspective, I think it was more of a confidence issue than it was play calling or anything like that. And I mean, if your confidence is down, you're going to have a very tough time winning the game.
We're talking with Zach Medeiros Here on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. We're going to pause for station identification as well as for PSA. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford.
91.5 WMFO Medford.
This is Nate Bowman from Cal's 2 Fire and Rescue, reminding you to keep your stovetop clean. Keep anything that can catch fire, like pot and pan holders, oven mitts, paper towels, and napkins, away from your stovetop. Clean up food and grease from your stovetop and burners. Pot holders and oven mitts should be easy to reach when you're cooking. Avoid wearing loose clothing and never hold small children while cooking. Although kitchen fires may seem small, never forget how dangerous and devastating a fire can be. When in doubt, get out and call 911 for help. For more information, call your local fire department or go to www.c2fr.org.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, alongside with Zach Medeiros of the Toronto Argonauts of the Canadian Football League. We got about 4 minutes left, so let's quickly talk about the Seattle Green Bay game. Your thoughts and takeaway from that matchup in which Aaron Rodgers seemingly looked like the Aaron Rodgers of old.
Yeah, he did. This is probably the closer game of the weekend, I would say. This game could have gone either way. I just think that slow start by the Seattle Seahawks offense in the first half, just I think that's the one thing that kind of bit them in the ass a little bit, right? And yeah. I think you look at the second half, and Russell Wilson was the best player on the field. He was 15 of 18 for 172 yards and a touchdown. So I think, you know, that slow start really came back to, you know, bite them a little bit. And then, you know, back, you know, in the fourth quarter, I don't really agree with Pete Carroll punting with maybe 2 minutes left. I understand he still had all his timeouts, but at a time when you really need to score, and I get it, you want to trust in your defense, I still probably would have, you know, tried to go for it still. I mean, it is Aaron Rodgers, right? I don't want the ball in his hands ever. I don't care if it's the game's not really going his way. I don't care if, you know what I mean? It's Aaron Rodgers. He's one of the best QBs out there. So when they really needed a stop after that, Green Bay had those two third down conversions. So that was pretty much it. I think just the slow start, a couple of calls from Pete Carroll, and that was pretty much it, man. I don't know. This game was really close for the most part. It kind of went the way I thought Seattle was actually going to win this game just based off how they were on the road this year. I mean, they were 8-1, played really well on the road. And Wilson, you know, having MVP caliber season, he showed more than enough for me to think that, hey, they could actually go into Lambeau and pull this off.
I definitely think so, because, like, when looking at Seattle, like, they had the chances and whatnot, but you know, like, DJ Metcalf was just an absolute beast, and he was definitely a big factor, especially in the second half. Since we got just under 2 minutes left, let's look ahead to Championship Sunday. This Sunday, you got Green Bay at San Fran, and you also got the Titans in Kansas City. Let's start with the NFC. Green Bay at San Fran. Your thoughts and an early prediction of that game.
I got San Fran winning 24-17. I think
I'm at a loss of words.
I don't know what you got, but yeah, I just think right now with the way San Fran is, I just think they have too many pieces right now. They're at home, which helps. Everyone's playing well. Defense, offense, they don't really have any injuries to worry about. Too much depth. It's going to be too much for Aaron Rodgers to handle.
I got, for some reason, I really like San Fran in this game, but I'm actually going to go with Green Bay. I think they're going to win this game 28-24. I think Aaron Rodgers is more motivated now more than ever, considering that he hasn't been back to the Super Bowl in nearly 10 years. So I feel like he's overdue, but San Fran has had its magical run, and I think Green Bay wins this game. But Tennessee versus Kansas City, your thoughts?
Oh my God! You know what? I love this one. Tennessee's going on, and I feel like the week that I bet on them to win, they're gonna lose. So, this is tough. I'm gonna go Kansas City, but you know what? I wouldn't be shocked if Tennessee wins, but I gotta go Kansas City.